Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. We own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. Listen to us every day from 11 to noon or reach us through restaurantguysradio.com. How you doing, Francis?
I'm doing great. We have we've had Tim Olson, the winemaker, on in studio for the first half of the show, and we have a very special guest joining us for the second half of the show.
We are very pleased to announce our guest.
We have Ms. Ruth Reichel on the line with us.
Ruth, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Great to be here.
It's great to have you on the show. We're so glad you came on. We've both read your book, and we've both read many of your reviews, and restaurateurs read restaurant reviews and occasionally cringe and go, oh, you know, it's a real emotional roller coaster ride. The many of the words that you've written have taken us on over the years.
Good. Yeah, I like that.
It's always the most fun, though, to read the really great reviews and the really, really scathing reviews.
Yeah, everybody loves the bad ones.
Are they more fun?
I think they're easier. They're not more fun. You know, it's very easy to be negative about a place. It's very scary to be really positive.
Mm-hmm. Why is it scary?
You throw your heart over the fence, and then you steel yourself for the hundreds of letters you get from people who have terrible experiences in restaurants that you've loved.
Mm-hmm. Well, don't you get as many terrible letters from some place that you pan from people who love it?
Not usually.
Really? We restaurateurs are out there. No one sticks up for us.
Well, you get, you know, a few, but they're not as angry as the ones from someone, you know, who's just spent
$400.
It's their big night out, and you've ruined it for them because you told them to go someplace, and it was terrible.
Right. Can we talk a little bit about a review, actually, that you talk about in your book that for me, changed the way I look at restaurant reviews for the rest of my life, that did both of the things that we're talking about? That Le Cirque review was just a momentous occasion, I think, in the restaurant world, where you and we should tell everybody exactly what happened there.
The review, it's seared in my brain. it was a double review, and it was when Ruth first came to New York as the restaurant critic, and she still was unknown, and gone to Le Cirque in disguise when they were a 4-star restaurant, and it was called The Two Views of Le Cirque. Dinner is an unknown diner, and dinner is a most favored patron.
Right.
And Ruth wrote this double review of what it was like before she got spotted as a New York Times restaurant critic and what she got spotted after. And at the end of your review, you said basically, if you're somebody and you get a check next to your name in the reservation book, go.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a nobody, maybe your $90 is better spent elsewhere. And
right.
That was just...
It was great. And I remember at the time you talking about the raspberries that got whisked away from under your nose right as they were about to be served to you as soon as somebody recognized that you were the New York Times restaurant critic. And I remember reading it at the time just being totally in awe of that.
Of you, Ruth. What were the ramifications of that review? I mean, has that ever been done before?
Not that I know of, but the genesis of it was that for years I would come to New York. I was a restaurant critic at the LA Times, and people would say, "Do you want to go to Le Cirque?" And I would say, "No, I'm not known there."
Mm-hmm.
And everybody understood that it was a restaurant that you went to if you were known. And so when I suddenly had to review it, and I knew that they had a photograph of me and knew what I looked like, and so I did the first of what turned out to be many disguises and went in there as this humble Midwestern woman and was treated, two women, and we are treated, you know, just the way you don't want to be treated in a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
You wait a long time for your table, you get a terrible table in the back, the waiter very lengthily announces the specials to the person seated to the right of you, but completely neglects to tell you about any specials.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, my favorite moment, just because it was so irritating.
I know what you're going to say. Go ahead.
The wine list.
I know.
The wine list is one of those, you know, giant tomes that takes a half an hour to read through, and I have it for exactly 1 minute before it's snatched out of my hand by the waiter and given to a man.
They gave her the wine list, then took it away from her to give it to a man.
It was
gave
a beautiful thing, Ruth. I think that one of the things that everybody enjoyed about that review is we've all been to restaurants. Even Francis and I are in the restaurant business. But if you don't know the right person at the right place sometimes, you can just be treated awfully. And nobody wants to go and drop a lot of money in a restaurant and be treated awfully.
No, I mean, as Molly, my disguise, ends up saying, I've come here for a glamorous evening,
right,
and I've been humiliated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's funny. First of all, what I want to say about that review is that really said, Ruth Reichel's in the house, okay? There's a new critic in town, and here I am. And you took a star away from them, right?
I did.
Yeah.
And I thought you should have taken two.
Yeah, I remember when Francis, because actually Francis handed me this review and said, you have to read this review. It's the best review I've ever read.
Ever.
And he handed me the review at the time and said, you have to read this review. And it really, I think you stunned the restaurant world and for the better.
All to the good.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that was so amazing to me is that when I actually showed up as myself, and I show up 45 minutes early for a reservation, and it was just, a stroke of amazing good fortune that Sirio says as he's leading me to the table.
Oh, yeah.
It's my favorite line that anyone
has. Oh, mine too. I have it memorized. One.
The King of Spain is waiting in the bar, but your table is ready.
I love that line. But the King of Spain was really waiting at the bar, wasn't he?
He was really waiting at the bar. He was.
I didn't know that until I read the book.
Yeah,
because I read that. I thought he was using hyperbole when I read the review. But then I read the book, and I found out that the King of Spain really was waiting at the bar.
He really was. And, I took my very elegant nephew with me, and I said, oh, yeah, sure. And Johnny turned around and said, no, that is the King of Spain. I saw him on TV last night.
I'll tell you what I really, really enjoyed about the book, and Francis and I obviously read your reviews throughout your tenure at the Times, but what I really enjoyed about the book was seeing your perspective and seeing the critics' perspective. Obviously, as restaurant owners, we've always had the restaurant owner's perspective of trying to do all these things, A, to impress your patrons and trying to level the playing field. Although I'm a believer that your patrons who come and visit you every week deserve a little bit of extra attention and a little bit of feeling like they're a special patron. At the same time, you can't do that to the detriment of your other patrons.
Can I say the thing that amazes me about restaurants is I'm stunned at how easy it is to be nice. I mean, everybody understands that sometimes you have people who you can't get up from the table. That you've booked a 9 o'clock reservation and the people who've been sitting there since 6:30 have paid their check but they won't get up.
Right.
And, we all understand that happens. And it's so easy, it seems to me, to say to people, I'm so sorry. We're really unhappy about this, that your table isn't ready. Can we give you a glass of wine? An apology goes so far. Instead of what you get 90% of the time is, why would you think your table would be ready when you reserve?
The problem with that, Ruth, is you actually have to be sorry for it to come across the fact that you're sorry.
And all the money that a restaurateur spends on plates and glassware and linen and sculptures and all that stuff, I'll go to a dive where they're nice to me before I go to a fancy schmancy restaurant where they're haughty. I mean, I don't go there for you to treat me like I'm haughty. I go to buy into the glamour, you know? And I think that you had a real effect on the whole New York restaurant community and made the restaurant community more aware of that. And I would like to talk with you more about that. We have to take a short break, but I want to come back and talk with you about how you changed how New York eats. Will you stick around with us?
I will.
Super. We'll be back with Ruth Reichel, a former restaurant critic of the New York Times, author of the new book, Garlic and Sapphires, and editor-in-chief of Gourmet Magazine in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450, time is 11:45.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
You're back with the Restaurant Guys, and we're talking with Ruth Reichel, author of the new book, Garlic and Sapphires, also editor-in-chief of Gourmet Magazine, and was the longtime restaurant critic for the New York Times, the most powerful restaurant critic in the world. Ruth, with that first review that of Le Cirque, the two views of Ruth Reichel, and then thereon by, you know, your predecessor had pretty much stuck to French-inspired European continental restaurants above 14th Street, and you started going to Korean barbecues and sushi places. And
Japanese noodle houses.
And you changed the way that the Times reviews, and you changed the way that New York eats. How did you do that? I mean, what effect do you think you had on New York dining? Or do you think that was coming anyway and you just reflected it?
I think it was probably coming anyway. I mean, I think I showed up here just at a time, I mean, with this very California sensibility, since I'd been living in California for 20 years. And, you know, this real passionate interest in Asian food and a real sense of the kind of informality that was coming in restaurants, that, you know, it was really California. It was, you know, people like Wolfgang Puck who said, wait a minute, things have changed. Rich people don't particularly want to dress up anymore to go out to eat, and we can, you know, develop this new, more casual style, and we can expand the menu. We, you know, really pay attention to Asian cuisines that have never, you know, really infringed on high dining.
Well, you know, Ruth, I think that I think you may not be giving yourself enough credit there, because I do think that your reviews had a big part of that. But one of the things that they also had a big part, I believe, in changing was, and Francis alluded to this before when he talked about the haughtiness of that New York maitre d' or New York waiter. And we've seen a lot of that change over the last 15 years. And I do think it's a reflection of diners, but I also think it's a reflection of, hey, I'm going to get panned if I come across with the wrong attitude to the wrong person, and I think that was a really good thing.
Yeah, well, I think there's no question that everybody knowing that I was going out in disguises, and that you know, frumpy little old lady you just dissed, that might show up in print.
Love that.
You know, I think it terrified people.
Mm-hmm. Well, sure. Every time they walked by Le Cirque, they saw Siri McConey's head on a spike, and they thought. And they thought, be careful, Ruth Reichel may be here in disguise. And but that did a lot. My parents used to say, well, we're not going out to dinner in New York, because they had been mistreated. My dad's a fireman.
Right.
You know, and it's like, you know, he would go and, you know, we always say about the way we do our restaurant, you know, there are people that come into our restaurant that can afford to eat there every night. And there are people that save up their pennies to come there once a year, twice a year, once a month. And those people, it's almost more important to make sure that they have a great time.
Exactly.
Because it's a more important part of their lives.
Well, yesterday we were celebrating graduation, and I had a meeting with the staff before. I said, you're going to have diners tonight that have never eaten in a restaurant like this before. You need to make sure that they have a special time and that their evening is perfect. This is a graduation day. It's a very important memory for them.
Well, I wish every restaurateur felt that. Because I do believe that you have a kind of contract with your guests.
Sure.
That you're going to give them more than just good food. And I think that's the thing that I really changed, was that I really believe that restaurants are kind of theater.
Yeah.
And instead of just focusing on what was on the plate, I really talked about the theater of dining.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I mean, and I think that was a big change.
Well, it's the whole experience. And I think I remember that people really rebelled when you started writing about the whole restaurant experience. They said, focus on the food, focus on the wine, as if it's some sort of a contest. And we talk about the same thing. We talk about the 100-point scale with wine a lot, and the sort of the problem with using such a severe shorthand. Can I read a little bit from your book?
Sure.
There's a quote in here that I love. It's your husband talking to you that you quote in the book. He says, I remember that when you got into this, it was almost a spiritual thing with you. You love to eat. You love to write. You love the generosity of cooks and what happens around the table when a great meal is served. And so that's sort of I think the guiding principle now is it is the whole experience that's important.
Right. And I think it always has been. It needed someone to point it out and say, you know, if you have had a terrible time, if you've been treated badly, it doesn't matter how good the food is. Mm-hmm. The evening is ruined.
Yeah. You know, we had heard rumors, and here we are asking you in person. We'd heard rumors that when you first came to the Times, you sort of didn't like the star structure, that the Times had considered abandoning that. Is there any truth to that rumor?
I hated the star structure and actually had a discussion at one point with Joe Lelyveld about it. And he said, well, we'll entertain the notion of getting rid of it if you want. And I said, look, as a writer, I loathe it because, look, I really want people to read the reviews. And if people open up the newspaper and see one star and go, well, I'm not going to read a one-star review, why would I give anybody one star?
Oh, I always read the one-star reviews, Ruth.
I'm the satisfactories and the pours because they're
that,
painful.
That Boxtree review was just...
That everybody liked that. Well, that's what I made the one stars be not good so people would read them.
Right.
And then, you know, two stars you'd read because maybe it'd be a restaurant you'd want to go to.
Right.
But, you know, as I said to him, as an editor, I think you'd be crazy to get rid of the star system because it gives the paper a lot of clout.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
You know, every time you write a four-star review, it gets press all over the world. Oh, new four-star restaurant in New York. So why would the paper give it up?
Right.
And after all, the paper is trying to sell newspapers with those reviews.
Is that extra pressure for you? I mean, the difference between one to four stars could mean tens of millions of dollars for a restaurant. Is that extra pressure for you to you know, be more careful with how you're reviewing and maybe not give somebody one star who may deserve it or not?
I mean, the pressure is always there, and it's not so much about the star system. I mean, the pressure with the star system for me was you don't want to give people unreasonable expectations.
Mm-hmm.
So I always felt it was better for a restaurant to write a glowing review with two stars and have them say, oh, she's crazy, you know, this is a three-star restaurant, then write a three-star review and have people go in and say, is she insane? This is a three-star restaurant.
Right.
You have to think about the impact, you know, how people are going to take that in. So if you write a piece that really makes people want to go there,
that's the most important thing.
That's the most important
thing. When we come back, I want to ask you a question. We have a lot of restaurateurs in our listening audience. I want to ask a question that's relevant to them. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. Time is 1155.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
So, Ruth, this is a short segment, and again, we're talking with Ruth Reichel, editor-in-chief of Gourmet Magazine, who was the restaurant critic for the New York Times and has a new book out called Garlic and Sapphires, which you can find out more about by signing onto our
website.
Very
entertaining, insightful book.
And you can find out more about, more to buy this book on our website later on, www.restaurantguysradio.com. Ruth.
Yes.
As a restaurateur, we had an experience years ago where I recognized a prominent local restaurant critic. And I know who the person is.
She had introduced herself to us a few times on several occasions.
And I'm the maitre d'. I walked over and I said, oh, hello, Ms. Blank. How are you? And she was mad at me and has never written a kind word about me since. And I've seen her socially. What is a restaurateur? I mean, yes, I see why you want to be in disguise. But what do you think if you're a restaurateur, you spot the restaurant critic in the dining room. My inclination is to go over and say hello, like I say hello to everybody in my dining room.
You probably shouldn't.
Yeah. We're
sure of that now.
I should have been born in the Midwest.
I'll tell you why. I assume that this person was with other people.
One other person who I also knew.
Right.
Because it was odd. I did a restaurant radio show in Chicago a few weeks ago. And this is the person I was with had been reviewing restaurants in Chicago for 16 years, and he assured me and his audience that nobody in Chicago knew who he was. Well, I mean, that's ridiculous. Of course they know who he is. But he has this pose that nobody knows who he is, that he doesn't have to wear a disguise because nobody has a clue who he is. And every time you go up and say hello in front of other people, you're putting the lie to that.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, my notion is you treat them very, very well and pretend you don't know them.
Yeah. I felt like I would be a bad, and I just, an example, I felt like I would be a bad maitre d' having, at this particular reviewer, at the end of, when they're doing a review, and I've been in the business for about 20 years now, and when she would finish a review, when she was on her last visit, she would give you a credit card with her real name on it. And that was kind of her signature of how she would let you know
that
you were done and you were going to be reviewed. And frankly, I thought that I would be a bad maitre d' if you've introduced yourself to me five times over the last 15 years and I don't remember you.
Well, it's a very odd situation. I've never heard of anyone who plan to keep the job for more than 2 years, actually introducing themselves to restaurateurs.
Right. Well, like I said, this person didn't introduce themselves, but they give you a credit card.
Well, that's the same thing.
Right. Yeah, it really is. Hey, Ruth, we want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule at Gourmet to be with us and talk about your book, which we recommend that everyone should go out and buy today.
What a delightful time we've had with you, Ruth. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
I hope you'll come back and do it again with us sometime.
Gladly.
All right. Take care.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks very much. That was Ruth Reichel, everybody, editor-in-chief of Gourmet Magazine and former restaurant critic of the New York Times and author of the new book, Garlic and Sapphires.
And the book is great and fun and funny. And she reprints. She has recipes in the book.
Mm-hmm.
She has whole reviews, her best reviews in the book, and excerpts from her reviews. And she talks about the amusing things that happened as those reviews went on. My favorite, you know, you got to like, even though I'm a restaurateur and I feel sympathy, when she pans somebody, it's funnier. It's just, it sells more papers. My favorite quote is when she reviewed Tavern on the Green very poorly, and she says, she quotes it as a guest of hers saying, it was a museum of things that should never have been made.
Yeah, that's great. I just need to read a quick. Today, the Box Tree is a pretentious place serving fancy, not very good continental food for $86 a person price fix. But one thing has changed. The service used to be genial and attentive. Now it is as pretentious as the setting.
Ouchie.
Ouch.
Fun book to read. Go out and buy Garlic and Sapphires. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. Time is 12 noon.